Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the FirstGroup analyst call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There'll be a presentation followed by a question and answer session, during which you can press star and one on your telephone keypad to ask a question. I must advise you this conference is being recorded today, Thursday the 28th of January 2016. And now I'd hand over to your speaker today, Mr. Matthew Gregory. Please go ahead.
Morning, everybody. Thanks for joining the call today. I'm joined today by Rachel, Nick and Faisal, and I'm just going to take you through the key points of the quarter. We continue to make progress with our transformation plans, although the third quarter has been a challenging trading period in some of our markets. In particular, the first bus revenues in the quarter were affected by lower than expected retail footfall, which in part was due to the heavy rainfall experienced in many of our businesses for much of the period. And then in the US, the driver shortage challenge in certain local markets experienced by First Student has increased in the quarter as the US jobs markets continue to strengthen. However, although these issues have slightly moderated our expectations for the operating profit for the current financial year, they're not of a magnitude to materially affect our multi-year transformation plans. And also, there's no change to our expectation that the group will begin to generate improved cash flow in the 16-17 financial year. But let's look at the divisions in a little bit more detail. In student, we're still seeing the benefits of price rise increases put through during the summer 2015 bid season on a volume base slightly reduced by the second year of our up or out strategy. And we're continuing to move forward with our cost efficiency program, which is still expected to achieve $30 million per annum in savings over the current and next financial years, having delivered $19 million in 2014-15. But overall progress in the third quarter has been moderated by higher than expected costs incurred in response to acute driver shortages in certain localities. And you know this, the issue's been flagged already. But in the period, the problem has worsened as the US employment market continues to tighten. And this can be expensive when this occurs. We have to solve the problem. We have to get the children to school. And in some cases, it means putting engineers into the driving rosters or bringing in drivers from outside of the local area and paying accommodation and so forth. It also makes it more difficult to push our other cost efficiency actions through. As you'd expect, we're continuing to work through to resolve the challenge, and we are starting to get some traction with our new recruitment and retention approaches, but it has cost us some more in the quarter. Turning to First Transit, which has had a relatively good quarter, although the revenue from our Canadian shuttle business is significantly down, as we previously flagged, due to the sharp falls in the oil price last year, the overall division delivered flat revenues in the quarter, thanks to contract awards and organic growth from outside the oil sands regions. So with margins around 7% and a predominantly capital-light business model, we continue to look for further growth opportunities in transit, and the guys have been successful in doing that in Q3. In the period, for example, we started work on our transit management contract in Panama, and we're also looking at some interesting growth opportunities in the Indian employee shuttle market, where, subject to certain administrative conditions, we will shortly sign a small contract that we expect to act as an interesting platform for future growth. Finally, in the US, Greyhound continues to see challenges from the oil price reductions, which, as you know, makes competing forms of transport more affordable. But like-for-like revenues in the third quarter were down by 5.2%, but our point-to-point business was more resilient than the rest of the division, down only 1.2% compared with Q3 last year. So these are both moderately better than the comparable figure for the first half. Although clearly the oil price trajectory will continue to drive a degree of uncertainty in the short term. But we are continuing to flex our costs and taking out additional sections and reducing frequencies on some routes to compensate for the contraction in demand. Our conversion of the business model to real-time pricing and yield management continues to run to plan, and we talked about that at the half year. And it's still early days, but we remain confident that this upgrade to the business model will start to benefit our performance over time. Moving on to the UK, First Bus continues to work through its turnaround plans with cost efficiency programs still on course to deliver more in the second half than the first half. But commercial passenger revenue increased by 0.9% in the third quarter, a figure that was adversely affected by relatively poor high street footfall in the run-up to Christmas. In November, our operations in Glasgow, Scotland East and West Yorkshire were particularly affected by heavy rain and strong winds, while December was the wettest month across the UK since records began, with much of Northern England and Scotland receiving 2 to 4 times the average rainfall for the time of year, and there was some severe flooding at times as well. So, coupled with the ongoing weakness in concessions and tendered revenue seen across the industry, this has resulted in flat passenger revenues for the quarter, which was slightly lower than our expectations. But notwithstanding this, we remain on course to improve underlying margins this year by around 100 basis points before the impact of the previously disclosed depot closures. In First Rail, big news, of course, the award of the TPE franchise in the period. We also submitted our East Anglia bid in December, and we're continuing to examine other options in the UK rail franchise timetable. Our operations did see some impact on passenger revenue growth in the weeks following the Paris terror attacks and also from the poor weather, but still delivered 5.6% revenue growth over the quarter. And we don't expect these to result in a significant impact on our outlook for the division this year. In terms of financial position, we don't expect the slightly moderated profit outlook for the current financial year to significantly affect our cash flow expectations, which, to reiterate, is for broadly flat cash before the remainder of the rail franchise outflows of about £25 to £30 million. So, in summary, transformation plans continue to make headway in the period. It was a challenging third quarter in some of our markets. And while these effects have slightly moderated our outlook for op profit for the current year, they've not changed our expectations that the group will deliver significantly improved cash generation for the 2016-17 financial year. And overall, the group continues to strengthen its ability to deliver sustainable value creation in the longer term. And of course, we'll update you on that as the progress goes forward. So thanks for that, and thanks for listening to that. And I'll hand you back to the operator now for some questions.
Thank you. As a reminder there, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone keypad. That's star and one to ask a question. Your first question today comes from the line of Alexia Dugani from Goldman Sachs. Please ask your question.
Yeah, good morning. I just had three questions, please, if possible. Could you just quantify the increased costs in driver shortages? I note in the first half you mentioned it was £7 million. Can you just give us your expectation for the second half, please? And then just secondly, on sort of UK bus revenue trends, I mean, would you infer that sort of the slowdown in commercial revenue growth was predominantly driven by, you know, exogenous factors, i.e. the poor weather impacting high street footfall, or are you seeing sort of a change in underlying demand? And then just finally, on Greyhound Canada, do you have any update there in terms of sort of resolving the losses in that network? Thank you.
Okay, so thanks for that, Alexia. Let me come to those in turn. So in terms of quantifying the issues in student, I mean, we did talk about £7 million in the first half. I'd expect that to be around double for the second half. Again, there's a lot of different factors coming into play there, but when you add it all up, it'd be more like double for the second half. On the UK bus, it's a little bit difficult to really sort of work out whether, you know, the reduction is down to particular rain aspects, or whether it's down to particular timing, or whether there's a particular sort of fundamental slowdown. So trying to work out precisely the impact of the poor weather in certain areas is quite tricky. I suppose what I'd say on that is that, you know, fundamentally, you know, our business is, you know, once we get through this cost transformation that we're looking for in bus, our business is very much focused on driving more and more people into the buses, and you know, that's really where the focus of the business is going. On the Greyhound Canada point, yeah, I mean, we note that. I suppose what I'd say on that is that we are working hard to find a solution to that, and when we've got something positive or something to say on that, then we'll come back and talk to you about it.
Okay, and if you don't mind, I wanted to ask a follow-up on student and the driver shortages. I guess having experienced this sort of job tightening, you clearly said that you're implementing this sort of recruitment and retention system. I mean, is there any scope that you can start incorporating this cost into sort of the next bid season, assuming sort of your expectation of the sort of the job conditions remain the same?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely yes, and you'd expect us to say yes on that. Of course, you know, our pricing going forward should be taking, you know, all of our cost factors into account. So yeah, absolutely, we are expecting to take any cost impact into account when we're pricing up the price increases for future contracts. So yeah, it is a dynamic environment, and you know, two things we've got to do is make sure that comes through, but you know, the biggest thing is make sure we're doing all we can around our systems, around our cost management to ameliorate the cost position first.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Alexia.
Your next question comes from the line of Damian Brewer from the Royal Bank of Canada. Please ask your question.
Oh, hello. Good morning.
Hi,
apologies. I've got multiple questions as well.
On
the UK bus side, I notice you've been doing, or rather the business has been doing, quite a lot of sort of promotional work in January in terms of sort of encouraging people back onto the bus. Could you give us an initial flavour of how that's gone and, you know, so far how are Q4 revenues beginning to trend? Is there any sign of recovery there, and is that included in the sort of moderated guidance? On the US, I think you're not alone in having this sort of wage pressures there. Aside from pricing and hoping you get the pricing up in that business as contracts come up for renewal, what other measures can you take there to get to the sort of the 10% margin goal for that business? And then I guess the final question, you know, on UK Rail, growth there still looks good given everything that's been thrown at you. With the greater Western electrification delays, there seems to be stuff in industry press about you trying to look at short form intercity 125 sets, changing the sort of fleet plans for that franchise. That, I would imagine, carries cost. Who takes that, or is there a likelihood that there'll be some renegotiation either in duration or terms around the Great Western contract at some point to reflect the delay in electrification?
Yeah, okay. So let's come through those as you put them to us, Damien. So on the bus side, you're quite right. There's been a lot of promotional work in January, and we've got a new commercial director in bus who started a few months ago. And you're asking exactly the same question that I'm asking, actually, was about, you know, are we seeing the uptick? Are we seeing, you know, value for money for that? Is it really being effective? I think the reality is on that, it's just a little bit early to tell. And, you know, we need to, this is good promotional work that we're doing, but we need to get underneath the skin when we do our analysis of whether it's, you know, whether it's really driving any behavior or not. I suppose in terms of sort of exit rates, we're not seeing any particular sort of deterioration in the first few weeks. So has that been taken into account? Well, yes, absolutely. But we're not seeing anything getting particularly worse there. On the wage front, yeah, you're right. We'll look to price that in. Are there anything we can do? I mean, yeah, there are lots of things that we are currently working on, and they were part of our plans anyway. I think we just have to be slightly more sophisticated in how we implement some of those plans in terms of, you know, how we're, you know, measuring and tracking the efficiency of the drivers and the labour costs. I suppose what I would say is that, you know, we know what the target is. The management are very clear on what the target is, and frankly, you know, as we've seen in some of the other businesses, as the environment has changed, it's up to us to find other ways of getting to our targets. So you can be sure that the management and us, and myself particularly coming in new, are really going through this to see, you know, what we need to do to get ourselves to the targets. There's lots and lots of different ways that we're looking at getting that business more efficient. I mean, coming back to the UK Rail, look, if there is any delay in the electrification, you know, that's going to trigger sort of a negotiated change within the agreement. Now, you know, there's nothing formal to announce, but that's how these things work. You know, if we have to change something that's different from the franchise, then we negotiate it and we, you know, we'll find a sensible position there. But obviously, when there's anything formal to announce on that, then we'll come back and talk about it.
Okay, thanks very much. Can I ask one cheeky follow-up, and that is...
Go on, then.
Given where you are, you've got your targets and you're holding them.
Yeah.
If you were to miss them, are you still happy with your capital structure being sufficient to support the credit rating as the bond debt matures over 18 and 19?
Well, I mean that is a hypothetical scenario. I think what we're focusing on very hard is meeting the targets. You know, and we've got a lot of work going on, and you know, one of the whole management team is focused on doing that. I think the key thing before we start, you know, trying to work out those kind of scenarios, is to focus on hitting the targets, to be honest. So that's all I'd say on that, to be honest, Damien.
Okay, thanks, Will. Good luck with the target. Thanks very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Joe Thomas from HSBC. Please ask your question.
Morning. I've got a few on rail, please. Can you just be specific about where the weakness was, first of all?
In what sense?
In which franchises and on what sort of routes?
Trading update, we're just giving you a sense of what's going on. I mean, obviously, our franchises are heavily weighted towards the GWR franchise. I mean, I think let me put it this way: we saw a bit of a reduction during the couple of weeks after the Paris attacks. It's very difficult to quantify that. You know, if you're going out trying to say, right, which passengers did not travel from Swindon to Paddington in those weeks because of the terror attacks, that's quite a difficult thing to work out. But the guys have tried to do the analysis and have talked to their industry colleagues, and they think there was a sort of 3.5% reduction for a couple of weeks. Now, looking at the weekly data, it's come back since then. And without that, growth would have been above 6%. So it's sort of in line with where we were. So, you know, I think taking the quarter as a whole, yeah, we saw a bit of a bump. It wasn't big enough to make us change our view on the profit for the year. So I suppose that's what we say on it. I don't really want to get into sort of line by line issues and sort of route by route analysis at this stage, if that's okay, Joe.
Has you say it's come back since then? Is it trending at a lower growth rate now, or is it has that dipped from the minus 3.5% recovered to what you were doing previously?
Yes, it has, and it's not that it dipped to minus 3.5%. It was a reduction from a higher level of growth to from around the 6% level to around the 3% level for a couple of weeks. It has gone back up to around the 6% level. So I think in terms of where we were, we're pretty much back on track, really.
Right, thank you. Can you just remind me, on the new Great Western, on the franchise extension, is there a revenue support mechanism in there if things are difficult?
No, there isn't.
Right, okay.
On that direct award.
Fine, thank you. And just two other things. Firstly, in relation to Alexia's question about quantifying the cost of driver shortages, just to be clear, you said it would be 7 million impact in H1 and double for the second half. Does that mean there's a 14 million impact for H2 and plus the 7 million for H1, or it's another 7 in H2?
That means it's the second of that. It's the another 7.
Okay. Yeah, thanks. Then finally, again on this issue of US labour costs, what sort of rate is underlying labour or wage rates growing at over there now?
Well, I mean, we've been seeing around sort of 2.25%, but obviously it's very, very sort of local where we had some of these issues.
It is very much about recruitment rather than the underlying rate of wage growth there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think it's around recruitment. It's around retention as well. You know, making sure we keep the people that we have. It's not a sort of industry, sort of a country-wide sort of pressure on inflation.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Gerald Koo from Liberum. Please ask your question.
Morning. I was wondering whether I could delve into the student labour issue as well. I mean, should we view this as existing problems getting worse, or is it a case of the same issues spreading to new regions? And in terms of which regions of the country, which regions of the country are you experiencing issues with? Are those the unionised areas or are they the non-unionised areas? Is this a case, and you say things are getting worse. Is this a case of people sort of quitting in recent months, or is this a problem that's been there since the beginning of the school year that's just getting worse? Thanks.
Yeah, okay. Well, again, it's difficult to get into real specifics on all of this. What I'd say on this, Gerald, is that we are experiencing issues in retaining people because there are attractive opportunities as some of the people, you know, if you look at who are we competing against, you know, we're competing against some of the retailers, for example, at the sort of lower wage end of the scale. So retention can be difficult, which is why we're looking in particular areas to sort of very specific wage increases. It is slightly spreading more geographically, but again, it's very much in places like, for example, Cincinnati. We're seeing issues in Washington, seeing some issues in Chicago. But I would say this is not something that's particularly down to unions at all, and not driven by sort of not seeing differences between union and non-union areas. This is really just around the economic conditions in particular towns and particular sort of areas. So, I mean, without going into sort of our detailed deep dive type papers with you, what I would say is that, yes, it's getting slightly more geographically spread. We've got systems in place that are helping us ameliorate this problem. But, you know, it is causing us a short-term concern. We're looking at, as we said in the previous answers, reducing the cost. And if we can't do that, then we'll find other ways of sort of getting to our targets. And whether that's through pricing or other cost measures, then that's what we'll do.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks, John.
Your next question comes from the line of James Hollins from Numera. Please ask your question.
Hi, morning. Three from me, please. What you haven't mentioned is Manchester Roadworks.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you're seeing less of an impact perhaps than your peers, or whether it's just something that you chose to leave out. The second one was, did I hear right and you're thinking about an Indian transit contract, and perhaps a bit more detail on what that might mean? And then on the final one is on, guess what, on the US school bus. Have you and your team done any work on some of the trends you might have seen, you know, way back in history when the US was showing good long-term macro growth and the sort of potential impact that had on retaining and recruiting bus drivers?
Yeah, okay, well, let's answer that one first. I think the team, you know, the team have been looking at trends where they can. I think the difficulty is that, you know, part of what we're doing is actually implementing systems that help us really understand all this. So we can probably get some macro-level understanding which they look at. What we're concerned about is actually dealing with the issues right here, right now, and sort of combining new recruitment and retention systems with actually more efficient cost management. So it's a fair point, but I think we struggle to find sort of data that's relevant to our detailed business for that student piece. Talking about the Manchester roadworks, I mean, yeah, absolutely. The roadworks in Manchester are not helping us. Frankly, the roadworks in Bristol are not helping us at all. But I think, you know, that what we're trying to do is demonstrate that, you know, we were across the board, we were affected by sort of the retail footfall piece, you know, which obviously, again, won't have been helped by the roadworks. But what we weren't trying to do in this trading update was to sort of sit and pick off individual towns and say, well, it was difficult there and difficult there. We're just trying to give you a sense of how the trading was. But direct answer to your question, Manchester roadworks, Bristol roadworks have not helped us. And hopefully those will get resolved over time. The final point about India, yeah, it's an interesting point. So, you know, the transit business you know, really are at the vanguard of our sort of international development. We've been given an opportunity to get involved in a shuttle service in one of these big sort of IT parks in Pune, but it's starting small. So we're talking, you know, in the single digits of buses to start off with, so not trying to get carried away with it. But you know, in a past life, I spent a bit of time in some of these places in Bangalore. So actually, they're doing exactly the right thing. They're starting off small in a contract that they can understand, and actually straight away you can see opportunity to grow and grow. Put more buses in there. There's more business parks in Pune. You can then go to Bangalore. So you know that from my perspective, that transit business, you know, it's a good business that can just keep incrementally improving the contracts and winning new contracts. And this Indian example is a great example of doing it. You know, we're being very entrepreneurial with the contracts, but also doing it internationally. But let's not get too carried away with it right now. That's what I'd say.
Just very quickly, if it were to get bigger, if you know, got a decent sized contract in Bangalore, what's the sort of nature of it? Is it low capital? You know, very much.
Same model as the transit model. So relatively low capital. And just to be clear, this is in Pune. The Bangalore piece was you know, just an opportunity for other markets that they could expand into eventually.
Yeah. All right, thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Anand Date from Deutsche Bank. Please ask your question.
Hi, morning, everyone. I had a couple of questions just on the UK, actually, first of all. I was just wondering if... Is there a risk that we're all missing the trick here? And actually, structurally, this is a lower growth industry. I'm thinking, you know, we look at the growth of like ASOS and Boohoo. If discretionary volumes to go shopping and so on are just lower, have you been able to do any kind of customer surveys or whatever to say, you know, that's taking 20 bips, let's say, off long-term growth? Or what the actual structural impact might be rather than, you know, roadworks, regional macro weakness or whatever. And then following on from that, if there is any sort of structural weakness, have you maybe thought about what that might mean for rail as well? You know, we're all quite wedded to these high fixed cost bases, the revenue assumptions over, 10 years. If it turns out that actually structurally growth is just going to be even a little bit lower, is that an issue and is that something you're thinking about?
And just
one more. You're kind of doing all these small contracts in Mexico and India you mentioned today. Do you think the management capabilities is now the right time to be looking at those sort of contracts?
Yeah, well, let me deal with that one first. I mean, what we've got is this contract in Panama and India. I think you're asking the right question, Anand, and you know, from my background, that's, you know, having worked in a very multinational business with, you know, lots of acquisitions, those kind of things, that's exactly the right question. I think, and I've sat down with these guys and spent some time with the international business development team. They are doing it in a very focused way. So, you know, the Panama business, for example, is actually is a very big contract, but the piece that we're doing is not a huge exposure. So we're sort of managing the contract, as it were, and that's what we're getting the revenue from. The India contract is a small startup, and you know, I think, you know, they are we're being very selective about which markets we're going into, and we're not sort of trying to charge off across, you know, 10 different territories trying to find lots of different things. So it's the right question, but I think, you know, we've got the right people looking at this, and you know, we're conscious of it, we're looking at it, we're understanding it, but you know, we've got to be clear on this. There's two things. One, it doesn't distract from the core operations. But secondly, you know, the business needs to grow. You know, we need to get back on. You know, once we deliver the transformation plan in terms of the cost base and the margins, we've got to grow. And this is a good way of starting that process sort of in a small, controlled, focused way. So it's a good question, but I think we're okay as it stands today. I mean, coming back to sort of the more bigger question around, you know, is there a structural change in the industry? Well, there could be. I think we are thinking about it and looking at it. I think what you've just got to bear in mind, obviously, is that there are multitudes of factors, and you know, we are looking at very specific parts of the market that we're trying to transfer from choosing other ways of traveling onto buses and potentially onto rail. So whilst there may be some impact here, and we will do that work, and I'm sure everyone in this sector will be looking at that as well. You know, again, the focus is around how do we attract more and more people onto our forms of transit. I suppose that's all. You know, given that this is a trading update, just to let you have a flavour of what's been going on, it's probably better to attack those kind of issues when we come to a broader presentation.
Okay. And sorry, if I could just ask another one, just quickly on the kind of it seems that everyone in the industry, or what's in vogue at the moment, is, you know, high return on capital, low capital intensity, kind of transit-like businesses.
Yeah.
If everyone's going for that, you know, are the margins, is 7% still the right margin? And is there a sense that at the start of these contracts, you're willing to accept lower because then you might get add-on work, or is it very, very disciplined? You know, if it's not 7%, we're not doing it.
Yeah, well, look, we do look at the contracts, and we would expect to obtain that return over the life of the contract, and then there's always going to be an element of sort of starting off lower and growing it. You know, I think the reality is that it's right for people to look at this, and it is an attractive market. But I think, you know, we are, you know, a strong player in this market. We've been doing it for a long time. We've got an established base and a reputation, so we'd expect to sort of still be very much a leader in this area.
Okay. Thanks very much. Cheers.
Okay. Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Damien Brewer from the Royal Bank of Canada. Please ask your question.
Yeah, good morning again. I just want to follow up on one thing and ask one other question. First of all, on the UK bus side, I know you seem reticent to give it, but patently, you know, Stagecoach has had similar issues, but there was some significant divergence in their growth between sort of -4 and +4. So I'm just wondering whether you can give us a feel of whether, for example, that 0.9% on the commercial revenue was reflected entirely across the business, or whether there are some areas that were doing significantly better or significantly worse than that. And then second question, I appreciate you're holding your medium-term targets, but obviously this does feel like a setback along the way. So I'm just wondering, with such a material event, where the CEO is today and why he wouldn't be on the call.
Yeah, well, let me address that one head on. I mean, the reality is that, you know, your take is that it's a material event. We think this is a knock in the quarter, and, you know, particularly around the student piece. You know, we've flagged this issue before, so we've maintained our tradition, I suppose, of, you know, with the CFO doing the interim trading outlook, and, you know, frankly, I'm comfortable doing that. Tim and I had a conversation about it earlier in the week. We had a board meeting earlier in the week. The board are entirely comfortable with the way that we've carried on, and I think, you know, if you can take it the other way around, if Tim had been here, then gosh, why are you changing it, and is it even worse than it is? So I think our reaction to this and the way we're presenting it reflects our view that, yes, it's been challenging, but that at this stage, we're not sort of backing off what we said before. That's our take on that one. In terms of the regions, coming back to that point, there are ups and downs in the revenue, and I suppose I'd expect, you know, some of the areas, some in the southwest particularly, where we've been doing quite well on driving volume into the business has been positive. We have suffered more in the northern areas, you know, particularly around where there has been poorer weather. But again, I suppose, Damian, at this stage, that gives you a flavor that it's been sort of better in the south and sort of worse in the north, which ties in more to the weather side. But I don't really want to get down to the position of giving sort of regional updates on that business, if that's okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Thanks, Damian.
Your next question comes from the line of Julian Wellington from J.P. Morgan. Please ask your question.
Hello. Good morning.
Morning.
I'd just like to ask a couple of questions, please. Just in terms of, I suppose, first and foremost, just on fuel costs in the, I suppose, in the U.K. is where I'm thinking in the bus business. I know that fuel is not the largest component of cost in that business, but you are hedged forward this year and next to receive benefits in the form of lower fuel costs that you'll pay, where the majority of the benefit comes through in FY17. But there is still a potential cost benefit this year from lower fuel. Just wondered where we are with that. Can you just talk about if you are expecting to see that benefit, or will it be sort of offset elsewhere?
Look, I mean, I don't think it's changed significantly since the half-year position, really. I suppose we're definitely looking to see some improvement coming through in the 17 year, but I don't think there's no real change to what we said at the half year, frankly. So nothing, no major change there, Jolene, is what I'd say.
Okay, so benefits may come through, but I suppose you may have to do bits and pieces with pricing around the edges as well, so not guaranteed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let's just, you know, we're just trying to keep an even keel on this one. If we get some benefit, great, let's see it. Definitely we are expecting for the 17 years some improvement.
Yep. Okay, good. And just on to student. So just in terms of the, I don't know if you can, maybe you can't answer this, but I'll ask anyway, the average wage levels, and I suppose, do you have a feel for what the gap is in sort of hourly rates or otherwise between, I mean, you mentioned you compete with, you said, retailers. Do you have a feel for what the extra amount somebody gets if they go and work for a retailer for, I should say, a shift instead of driving a bus? Do you have a feel for what that gap is?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult for me to say, and I don't have a sort of categoric answer to that. I suppose what I'd say is you get what I think we get with the student people is you've got people who are working sort of 6 hours, so they're doing the morning shift and the evening shift, and you know, they might then be tempted to do, well, I'll do a bit more and get a substantial increase because I'm going to do a few more hours. I think if you look at the sort of the dollars per hour, we probably pay more than the retailers, but because they're only working for 6 hours instead of maybe an 8 hour or whatever the shift is, they can shift their overall family income. Does that give you a bit of an answer to the fact I can't give you categoric average costs?
Yeah, no, that's fine. I understand there may be sensitivities with that. I suppose it might just be something interesting to look at the full year stage. If you any other sort of analysis you can provide about that, because that does seem to be, you know, that I suppose if you can show that's closing or, you know, whatever you're doing with that, that could be, you know, interesting in terms of informing the market going forward.
Cool.
And just finally on UK Rail, feels like X the specific impact you talked about that modal shift is still ongoing, and you know, it feels like the like-for-likes are quite strong there, apart from the individual thing you talked about. I just wondered what in terms of bidding, you talked about, was it Greater Anglia, where you're going to submit a bid or you have submitted a bid? What about the other big ones, South West Trains and West Coast? Can you confirm if you're going to bid for those? And if you are, can you say what the bid cost will be?
Well, look, I think I can confirm that we would bid for the, you know, the South West. We're very keen to build up our rail portfolio again. The guys are very active and are, I know that they've been sort of very heavily involved in the initial stages of the South West piece because that's already sort of kicked off. It's difficult to be categoric in, other things because we need to see the results and the outcomes and what impact that has on the whole portfolio. But look, we're very positive about rail, definitely for the South West. There's no reason why we wouldn't be going for West Coast as well, but, we just got to let's take it stage by stage. At this stage, I wouldn't really want to get into the bid cost for that, to be honest. But typically, we'll be it's around between £5 and £7 million, I suppose, isn't it? It's not cheap.
No, I think I was just sort of wanting to get your opinion on if there was a flurry of bidding activity, if that profit number could be a bit high in terms of what people have got in forecast, but I don't know, maybe it's already factored into your thinking.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're comfortable with where we sit for this year in the numbers. I mean, I think we've got a bid team, and there's a lot of activity. And I suppose what I'd say is we're not going to have a sudden reduction in our bid costs coming through because we are still actively pursuing a larger rail portfolio.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's clear. All right. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Martin Crone from Shore. Please ask your question.
Morning.
Morning.
Very quickly, two questions. You'll be glad to hear there's none on First Student. On the bonds, I mean, notice that your bonds are trading down quite significantly in the last kind of 6 months or so. My rudimentary analysis would suggest you could buy them back in the market, sort of NPV neutral, give or take. Would you consider buying back some of these bonds in the market, particularly the 2018?
Yeah, I mean, what I'd say on this, Martin, is that your observation's not lost on us. The board has considered this in the past, and we continue to look at this. What we have to do is you're absolutely right that the price of this has been coming down. What we have to consider is just that the use of the cash. Look at the short term versus the long term. So, it's a fair point. We are considering it, and the board do look at this on a regular basis.
Okay, thank you. And in terms of sharp intake of breath, your dividends. Given you've had time to get your feet firmly under the desk and be around the businesses and things, could you give some thoughts as to the key metrics you think are important in terms of when you return to the dividend list and any indication you have at this point as to when you think that might happen?
Yeah, look, I'm not going to give you an indication when I think that might happen. What I'll say is that we have been clear that we need to have the business in a position where it's generating sustainable cash going forward to consider that. This year is not that year. And that's how that's been trailed, obviously quite heavily. That's how it's been. The board looks at this, and we weigh up whether we are delivering that sustainable cash, and when we are in a position that we deliver that sustainable cash, what we're going to do with it. And obviously, there are a number of calls on our capital or that cash, I suppose. And we'll continually consider ourselves and take the views of shareholders as well. Of what they want us to do with that. So that was quite a long answer to we're considering it, and when we feel we're in a position to pay a dividend, then we'll give that real clear consideration.
Would hitting your 17 numbers, both in profits and in cash flow, would you consider that to be sustainable cash?
It might do, Martin. But as a board, we have to consider everything that's going on at that particular time, as to whether paying a dividend is the right thing and the right use of that cash. You've put forward one scenario, which is paying down the bonds. So that might be a use for the cash. We might consider to take our leverage down. The number of ways we can look at that. So I'm not going to get into a position where I'm saying if we do this, then we're going to pay a dividend, because that's not responsible. The board will, you know, take all the factors into account once we've got sustainable cash generation going, and if we feel it's appropriate, then we'll start that process.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Yep. Great.
Once again, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone keypad. And your next question comes from the line of Annelies Vermeulen from Morgan Stanley. Please ask your question.
Good morning, everyone. Just a couple of questions from me. I'll do them one by one. So first of all, I wanted to ask, given sort of how much further the oil price has fallen, and particularly now petrol prices in the UK seem to have finally started to come down quite a bit more as well, going below a pound now, I think, per litre. Are you seeing anything sort of anecdotally, both for bus and perhaps shorter rail journeys, of people switching back to the car? I know this is obviously something that's played out quite considerably in the US so far, but I'm just curious as to whether that's maybe starting to finally come through in the UK as well. Anything you've seen?
Well, what I'd say is we haven't seen that specifically. We're constantly looking at this kind of modal shift concept, and you imagine that we're very sensitive to it, given what we've seen in our Greyhound business. But at this stage, there's nothing categoric that we can say on that at this point, Annelies.
Okay, thanks. And then I also wanted to ask, I know I touched upon it earlier, but the weather in North America, or
yeah,
the Snowmageddon, as the press has called it, have you had any sort of, both in terms of cancelled days for school bus, and would you expect to get those back if there are any cancelled days? Or similarly, any additional impact on Greyhound or transit from the weather?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, we have had some impact, and there was a situation where, with the snow mainly sort of falling on sort of late Friday on Saturday, that actually obviously helped us out, particularly around the student business, which is where we get a much bigger effect. So we definitely had schools closed on Monday, some of them closed on Tuesday, so there will be an effect. Obviously, we're very sensitive to this, and we try and do as much. Or take as much of a view as we can when we're looking at our forecasts and assessing the business. So I suppose at this stage, if that was it, then we wouldn't be overly concerned. It's a question of, obviously we've got another 2 months to run in our financial year, so we need to see the cumulative effect. Will we get the days back? Yeah, we tend to get the days back, but obviously that's going to be in next financial year. So that would be for 16-17.
Okay, that's all from me. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
There are currently no further questions.
Great. Okay, well, thank you. If I can close off then I very, very much appreciate everybody's time today. Thanks very much for the call, and look forward to speaking to you at the full year stage.
That does conclude the conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.